Hi, this is Scott Poland. Good afternoon. Hi, this is Scott Poland. I want to thank everybody for their interest in this really important topic. And I know a few of you probably
have tuned in.
No,
this
I'm
webinar.
Not saying. I'm just dropping this off now.
Andrew, are we good to go there?
Going on?
Oh, yeah, hold on. I'm going to try to remute the room. I'm not sure. No one should be able to talk right now. The whole room is muted. So whoever, everybody make sure your phones are muted. If not, but I'm going to try to remute the whole room. So it's just Scott and I that are able to talk. Stand by one.
Hi, this is Scott Poland, and I know we're having a bit of a challenge today with regard to technology, and let's be honest, suicide prevention in our schools is challenging, and I know some of you are probably tuning in for the first time, though I want to only quickly emphasize a few of the points that I made yesterday. I mean, the bottom line is, unfortunately, suicide is the second leading cause of death for everyone between the ages of 10 and 34 in this country. And it's critically important that we are all aware of the scope of this problem. And yesterday I highlighted the work of Dr. Anestis, who basically has documented how lethal guns are and the fact that guns are only used in 5% of suicide attempts, yet guns involved 50% of suicide deaths. And the message really for school mental health professionals, and when I use that term, I'm talking counselors, social workers, school psychologists. And I was personally a school psychologist in Texas for nearly 26 years. But we have to have direct language with students and with parents. And no matter how uncomfortable it might be to bring up gun ownership in their home, we have to. I'm reminded of one Houston teenager's goodbye note that said, "Why did you make this so easy? Why did you leave this gun available to me?" And I would encourage everybody to check out the website at harvardmeansmatter.com, which summarizes the research from all around the world to remove the lethal means. You raise the barrier on the bridge, and suicide rates go down. It is that simple. Now, I think everybody is aware of our legislation saying that we have to have teens in place in Florida schools to assess threats of violence towards others and threats of violence towards ourselves. And the bottom line is, I was privileged to be a part of the three-week training with Dr. Cornell this summer, and we had representatives from every single school district in the county. And we need to be alert for depressed and suicidal kids that might be angry or blaming others for their misfortune. But I'd be remiss today not to clearly say the vast majority of students at risk for suicide are only thinking about harming themselves. But we do know that the very few young people who have committed school shootings, the majority of them were suicidal. And I want to make one statement that I hope everybody will remember in your key leadership role in your county school district. Schools are the safest places children go. And let's be careful not to do things in schools that scare our students. And I had an article along with Terry Erbacher in the last NAS communique about being able to conduct active shooter drills in a way that does not unnecessarily scare staff and students. Now, I talked about this yesterday, but I want you to see these three points. What works? We already talked about the first one with regards to lethal means. Interrupting the development of all those adverse childhood experiences, living in poverty, living with a mentally ill family member, being physically, emotionally, sexually abused, being the victim of bullying, being rejected by a natural parent. And then yesterday I highlighted two groups that I believe must be much more involved in suicide prevention. In our communities, that's our physicians. The bottom line is the vast majority of individuals who died by suicide. By the way, I'm always going to use the term died by. I'm a survivor of my father's suicide, and if you say he committed something, I might say to you, you commit a crime, you commit a burglary. The word died by seems to imply they traveled a very long road, and even a 14-year-old girl traveled a very long road. In all honesty, it was everyone's fault, yet it was no one's fault. So we need our physicians to carry out screening, to be much more comfortable asking questions. Because again, the majority of suicidal individuals, approximately 70%, went to see their family doctor shortly before they ended their life. And the second group, and all I can do is speak honestly, and I've been at this nearly 40 years. We need to get building principals and superintendents in Florida more behind suicide prevention. In my opinion, it cannot be site-based. It should be county district-wide. This is what we will do in all of our schools. And if you do more than that, well, then good for you. And I believe strongly, school mental health professionals can be the difference. They need to be the leader and the suicide prevention expert in their particular building and throughout the district. I think you all know that suicide rates in America are at or near an all-time high. They're absolutely the highest in our western states. Montana is actually number one. And I hear all around the country, more and more fourth and fifth grade students are talking suicide. And yes, we do need to take it seriously. Their parents must be notified. In fact, there's only one exception to parental notification. That's if you believe the child is being abused and now we're calling protective services. There is a promising program at the fifth grade level called Riding the Wave out of the state of Washington. And yes, it does use direct language about depression and suicide. I shared this case yesterday and I was on the side of the plaintiff, the school district actually settled the case out of court, and the bottom line, and I got this exactly wrong, I was on the side of the school district. I don't believe they did anything wrong, but they settled out of court. And I talked yesterday about my search nationally, and I don't think a single school district in this country has been found liable in a bullying and suicide case, because it's pretty impossible to rule out all other very significant causal factors like mental illness, untreated or undertreated mental illness, and adverse childhood experiences. But the bottom line is there's a strong association between suicide and bullying, and we should not hesitate to ask a student known to be the victim of bullying about suicide. I'm going to move on and catch up to where I ended yesterday pretty quickly, but I want to call your attention to the high school results for the state of Florida, the Youth Risk Behavior Surveillance Survey. As you look at that data, I really have a simple question for you. Do you think you could find me a high school kid in the state who doesn't know somebody who talked about suicide, made a plan, or maybe even attempted? And those states that gather the Youth Risk Behavior Surveillance Survey data on middle schoolers, that data is even more alarming than for high schoolers. So it is the second leading cause of death for kids over the age of 10. And I think the bottom line is really this simple. We have to talk to kids about how to help yourself, how to help your friend. There is help available with as simple of an action as push the button and tell Siri on your iPhone, and her response is to connect you with the National Crisis Helpline. There are certain myths that are really holding us back with regard to suicide prevention. And unfortunately, some administrators are very fearful of this topic. They believe we should not discuss it because it just might cause a kid to think about it for the very first time. In reality, you bring it up and it gives a suicidal kid a chance to unburden themselves, to know they are not alone and there is help available. We need to talk about it more, our homes, our schools, and in our churches. And yes, there is a relationship between non-suicidal self-injury, i.e. cutting and burning, and suicide. And we should not hesitate to ask kids that we know or that are engaging in cutting and burning about hopelessness, giving up, and suicide. A survey of the literature says this: when we have a kid engaging and cutting over a long period of time, when they have used multiple methods to self-injure, when they disassociate when they self-injure, and when they experience little pain, there is a significant chance that ultimately they might make a suicide attempt. And by the way, non-suicidal self-injury is a coping mechanism. It's not working as well for them today as it did months ago. There's a quote from our Surgeon General: 47,000 suicides a year in this country. We need to talk about it more, and everybody plays a role in suicide prevention. Now, I've already alluded to a few of the things that I have found are holding schools back in suicide prevention. And of course, schools can't prevent suicides by themselves. They need to be linking with all the important state and county initiatives and with the Florida Office of Suicide Prevention. But schools have many competing demands. And Florida is a state that does not have required suicide prevention legislation for schools. So what should it be? What's the goal? What is it that I hope you will be leading your school district to do? Annual training for everybody. What to look for, what to do. Don't keep a secret. What's the referral process? I believe suicide prevention information should be posted on every county district website in the state. I could be searching for myself. I could be searching for my friend or for my kid. National resources, local resources, warning signs, what to do, and perhaps most importantly, who do I contact in the county school district for help? And everybody on the call today, which I'm pretty certain is exclusively school mental health professionals, you need to be comfortable with direct questions. And perhaps the only way we can do that is through going to trainings where there is a demonstration of a suicide assessment, where there is practice of suicide assessment, where there's a demonstration of parent notification and working to get a cooperative reaction from the parents. Now, all I can do is speak honestly. The bottom line is the average person out there going to see a private counselor, therapist, psychologist would automatically presume that they are competent in suicide risk assessment and management. But they may not be. It's not necessarily a requirement for the credential for any of those professional positions. Hopefully they've sought it out. Hopefully they got the experience through a particular class, through a workshop, through a practicum, through an internship, through a postdoc, but it's not automatic. Seven states, not Florida, have moved to requiring continuing education in suicide risk assessment and management for continuing licensure. So what's really the question I'm asking you to think about? Who can you refer kids to in your community that really know how to work with suicidal young people? And I'm reminded of a statement from a parent in Nebraska. I did exactly what the school said. I took him to the private psychologist. He told me my kid was a typical teenager. 2 weeks later, my kid died by suicide. Parent notification is essential. I already gave you the one exception. We have to use all of our skills to get a supportive reaction from those parents. And in Texas, a few times I had a parent say, "You are so off base. Don't you ever talk to my kid again." Well, sir, here's your copy of Texas Senate Bill 1122. Anytime I believe your son to be suicidal, I can and I will continue to work with them. Now, maybe somebody on the call today knows whether or not Florida has such legislation. And maybe about as far as we could go, if the parent is really angry at one school counselor, maybe the principal will say, "Okay, I'll have a different grade level counselor work with your child." But anytime we believe them to be suicidal, we are going to do our best to intervene. Reentry is critically important when kids are returning for a hospital because they have been suicidal. And to be honest, lots of important information is hidden from schools. And we need hospitals and private practitioners talking about the importance of sharing information with schools. And we need to be requesting that signed release of information. Now, I believe every point on this slide needs to be taken care of thoroughly before we walk into a classroom and talk to kids about suicide prevention. And if I'm the teacher and I don't feel very competent and I didn't really want to cover this subject and I go, "Oh no, here's what I have to tell you about today." Well, I've immediately minimized, dismissed, showed my attitude about this important information. So yes, I believe strongly we need to be in classrooms talking to kids about how to help themselves and how to help each other. But we need to do all the basics first. Some of you may be familiar with a gentleman named Kevin Hines. He survived jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge. Kevin speaks a lot about his suicide attempt, about his struggle with bipolar disorder. But I believe strongly his presentation is appropriate in a classroom, not in an assembly. You see, in an assembly, kids are very unlikely to ask you a question, nor do you get a read on how they are experiencing this information. And somebody went out a side door crying, and we don't even know who she might have been. And I got a call from a Florida county school not too long ago, and they said, "We had several suicides, and a world champion athlete heard about our suicides and wants to come speak in an assembly to all the students in an aftermath." You can probably figure out what I said, because my question was, what does a world champion athlete know about suicide prevention? And I do not believe we should be having an assembly after a suicide. And some of you are probably familiar with the After a Suicide Toolkit for Schools put out by the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention and the Suicide Prevention Resource Center. And I'll have a slide up towards the end of the presentation about that important toolkit. But I got written on page 30 there, "Do not have an assembly." And this is why your leadership is so critical in advising schools in all aspects of suicide prevention intervention, and postvention. So I'm going to move on a little more quickly now and get to where I was yesterday. But these next two slides are really important. I'm very excited that Florida has suicide prevention certification for schools. And the next two slides and information from the Florida Department of Education spell out the requirements. I'm hoping as a result of these two webinars, you approach your building principal, your county superintendent, and you talk about the importance of your school becoming suicide prevention certified. The requirements are very specific in terms of staff member training, the number of hours, the recommended programs are all posted at that website. So very important that the Department of Education has recommended two suicide assessment instruments, the Columbia Suicide Severity Rating Scale and the SAFE-T, Suicide Assessment Five-Step Evaluation and Triage. And these are the ones that I believe we should be using. By the way, for decades, I said, we must ask three questions. Are you thinking about suicide now? Have you ever attempted before? Tell me, how would you end your life? We cannot mince words. We can gather a lot of other important information, but those three questions are critical. If you're familiar with the Columbia, it basically took the three questions many of us have used for years and made it into six questions. And it actually asks, have you done anything? Have you gathered the lethal means? Have you done anything within the last few weeks? And yes, it breaks down into low, moderate, and high risk. But you know what I'm going to argue? I don't care how low the risk is. This kid's parents still need to know. But if it's high risk, obviously we're talking more intensive interventions. We may be talking the Baker Act. And our legislature is now requiring suicide assessment prior to calling for the Baker Act team to come out and do an evaluation. And I know without a doubt that there are issues. All of you have dealt with some very complicated situations. But here's what I find often is missing. We need to sit around a table and talk about what happened, what worked, how well did that go? What could we do differently? Is there something we need to improve about our process? I said I'd been at this a long time, now working on the sixth book about suicide and school crisis. And with my partner, we did the state plan and toolkit for Texas. We did the state toolkit for Montana. We're currently completing the one for the schools for New Jersey. And with one of our very motivated doctoral students, we're working on a toolkit for the state of Florida. And by the way, if you were to look at the Montana Cast S, and it's available online, you would find 30 downloadable tools that they're all there for you to use, modify, utilize in any way you wish. I was actually in Montana presenting just last week, and I got a lot of very positive feedback from school counselors, school psychologists, and school social workers. I'd be remiss today not to mention the wealth of resources that are available at the Jason Foundation. Sometimes I hear suicide prevention is going to cost the schools a lot of money. Obviously, I'm always going to be for more funding for suicide prevention, but so much of this is really philosophical. There's actually a lot of great training and materials that are available out there free. And the Jason Flatt Act has passed now in about 20 different states requiring suicide prevention in schools, but in Florida, it's still optional. But you can be the leader in convincing your administration to get more involved in suicide prevention. And ideally, a wonderful place to start is a task force with the school, the community, all involved in working on youth suicide prevention. So I finished the Witzel case yesterday, and now, Suicide Prevention Resource Center, Garrett Lee Smith. Do you all know who Garrett Lee Smith was? Well, he was a college student who died by suicide. His dad happened to be in the U.S. House of Representatives, and his dad sponsored the Garrett Lee Smith Memorial Act. It created the Suicide Prevention Resource Center. It provided grants for states, universities, tribal councils to work on suicide prevention. The only national legislation that ever passed. And we got one of those GLS grants here at NOVA. And what did we do with our grant? We made an original suicide awareness video. We made an original suicide assessment video. We made an original suicide postvention video. And we created the Suicide and Violence Prevention Office. But I would encourage you to look at all the resources at SPRC and their brief where they summarized all the research about suicide and bullying, saying strong association, yes. Causal relationship, no. I also encourage you to sign up for the SPRC Weekly Spark. It's free. It's an email that will come every Friday afternoon, keeping you up to date with the latest research, grants, and resources. There are now youth suicide consensus warning signs. These are a little different. I mean, we'd normally focused on giving away prized possessions, making out a will, not taking pride in appearance, talking about death, dying, and suicide. But if we concentrate on youth, we would add several points that are up here. Being overwhelmed with stress and pain. And by the way, the suicidal individual, they're not thinking about harming anyone else. They want to end what they perceive is unendurable pain. I want to be honest in telling you, there are a lot of kids under tremendous academic pressure today, often from their parents, to get into the flagship state universities. There is also a connection between sleep deprivation, depression, and suicide. I was actually in Orlando High School not too long ago. That bell rang at 5 minutes after seven. Do you have any idea what time you have to get up to ride a bus to be in your classroom that early in the morning? Does anybody know what the national recommendation is from the American Medical Association about start time for high school? Never before 8:30. I responded to a suicide cluster at Gunn High School in California, which is in Palo Alto and the highest performing academic public school in the state. And while I was there, the school board president said, "What do you think about our zero hour?" Well, first of all, what is it? We can go to school an hour before everybody else. Therefore, you could get an extra AP class in your schedule. What do I think about it? Since I know adolescents are chronically sleep deprived, I say do away with it. They did away with it for a year, but the parents wanted it back. And then the former chair of the English department at the high school started an interesting political movement. Save the 2008. That's the number of kids at Gunn High School. So what does Mark Vincent want? No kid's going to add another AP class without a counselor carefully going through all aspects of it. And he wants a homework app so that we actually know how many hours of homework the kid actually has to do at the high school level. I'm a very big fan of the SOS program. Just heard today about one of the local private schools that's using signs of suicide. Bottom line, signs of suicide has two components. It has a very well done video with the motto, ACT, acknowledge, care, tell. Nobody dies in the video. Somebody is suicidal, yes, but friends and adults intervene. And if I had one simple thing I'd love to do in every Florida classroom tomorrow, ask every single kid, who is your go-to adult at school? And when would I get really concerned? When they don't have one. And if they don't have one, we got to work on building those school connections. And the SOS Signs of Suicide program has a 7-item questionnaire about energy level, joy of life, depression, and suicide. And the kid turns it over, scores it, and knows whether or not they need to talk to a mental health professional today. And working on my New Jersey project, there's legislation in New Jersey to require universal screening for depression like SOS. But I have to tell you quite honestly, I want to support it, but I can't, because we have to give schools more resources. So we absolutely could follow up in a timely manner with the approximately 10% of New Jersey adolescents that are going to say yes about suicidal thoughts and actions. And by the way, we used to have the National Registry for Effective Prevention Programs at SAMHSA. But under the current administration, that registry has been deactivated. But SOS, along with Sources of Strength and many other great programs, were listed on the previous registry. The very least, I hope I'll get you to investigate this. I can honestly tell you, this is a tough sell. When is it possible to actually sell this to a school principal? Only after multiple deaths. Not after one student suicide, not even after two or even three. My experience has been, in fact, when do I get a call? The local newspaper is about to run a story tomorrow about suicide contagion at the high school, and now they're calling for help. And I'll quote one school superintendent for you in Nebraska. We had no idea about the 9 suicides in our sparsely populated county. Not until that story was in the Omaha World Herald. Well, since I happened to learn that 5 of the 9 victims attended the same high school and they died within a 2-year period, how can they not know what is happening and reach out for assistance earlier? We could spend the rest of our time today on all of these high-risk youth. We need to recognize, especially kids that are LGBT, kids that are homeless, kids that have run away, kids that are in foster care, kids that are the victim of bullying. We should not hesitate to ask all of these kids, matter-of-factly, have you thought about giving up? Are you thinking you don't want to live anymore? We need to talk about this more in classrooms, small groups, and individually. Here is Joyner's model. We're actually really lucky that Joyner is now here in Florida at Florida State. And if he was here today, he'd say this. Lots of people have the 2 key components to desire for suicide, perceived burdensomeness. So we should be really worried if a student says, everybody be better off with me dead than alive. And when they have thwarted or low belongingness, I'm going to be honest. We got a high school here in Broward County with 5,500 students. I worry that many of those students will not have a sense of connection at that school, and school connectedness is incredibly preventative. But lots of people have the two things we just talked about. They have to acquire the capability. They have to work up to it. By the way, if somebody tells you suicide is cowardly, they're wrong. Suicide is fearless. It takes a hell of a lot to overcome our most basic instinct, which is stay alive. They have to work up to it. Reckless behavior, strange injuries, broken bones, getting comfortable with harming their body through a severe eating disorder or through cutting. And earlier, I kind of skipped past the slide of the Golden Gate Bridge, but the term is vicarious habituation, knowing others. A lot of other people have jumped off that bridge, sort of draws people to the Golden Gate Bridge. But finally, after 50 years of debate, a barrier is under construction that should be done at least by 2021. And to be honest, it will save lives. So self-injury is one of the ways they're acquiring the capability for suicide. Best resources. Cornell has an incredible self-injury center. And I'm going to bet that your school district probably doesn't have a plan for dealing with self-injury. Well, go to the Cornell website. They've got a sample plan for you. Or look at the NAS handouts for home and school that I just did with two of my colleagues. And I also brought two young women to Florida, and we made a video for the State Department of Mental Health. It isn't an old guy like me talking about self-injury I never engaged in. Two young women who received a national award for their willingness to talk about their struggle are on the video. And I just asked them all the logical questions you're thinking of. Why'd you do it? Was it addictive? Did your school counselor know? What'd she do? How'd your parents find out? You were in treatment. What helped? What about these substitute strategies? Do those help you get control? Do they help distract you through those moments when you had an intense need to cut? What about dialectical behavior therapy? Did you ever have any of that? Did that help you? So my greatest hope would be you'd check out the website for the NOVA Office of Suicide and Violence Prevention and look at some of our resources. So, yes, our GLBT, and I would add Q, population has higher suicide attempts and deaths, but it's mostly the result of crap and rejection they get in their lives, sometimes from the people absolutely the closest to them. So now I'm going to speak pretty directly and honestly about the schools and suicide prevention. The treatment is really beyond what we could expect a school to do. My understanding as a result of the Stoneman Douglas tragedy, that at least the legislature knows to meet the recommended professional ratios, school counselors need to be doubled, school psychologists quadrupled, and social workers increased tenfold. And that's absolutely correct, but I think we all know progress will be slow. I'm aware of multiple school psychology openings in the state right now. We've got to attract more people to those professions. We have to retain them. We have to have more funding to increase those professionals. So the bottom line is, I don't think you can tell a kid, I'm here for you every Tuesday morning at 9 o'clock, no matter what. And we only have them in school for 7 to 8 hours a day. No matter how well trained we are, we've got to work for partnership, collaboration with parents and hopefully community-based mental health providers. And we need to approach students in a very non-judgmental way. The first time I word it like, you wouldn't harm yourself, would you? well, the kid's probably not going to really tell me what's going on. And we need to be very careful not to be dismissive, not to give somebody a little pep talk. In fact, in all honesty, we have a tendency to say, oh, you'd never do that. I know you'd never harm yourself. Let me tell you about time was really tough for me. When I was 14 years old, I got through it. You're going to be okay. We need to really be in a listening, empathetic mode and be non-judgmental. And the primary role of a school is to get to the bottom of what's going on today and take appropriate action with regards to parent notification, referral, and maybe even calling for the Baker Act team to come in and make an assessment. So we did make an original suicide assessment video, and there it is at our website. So there's an acronym from the American Association of Suicidology that sometimes help us stay focused. Is PATH warm? Let's see if I can remember what every letter stands for. Ideation, substance abuse, purposelessness, anxiety, trapped, hopeless, withdrawing, angry, reckless, and mood state. Try to make sure we are looking at all those factors. One article I really liked for school counselors went like this. Approach the person as if they're taking a trip. Stay really calm and ask them like all the logical questions. And remember those three critical questions. Previous attempt, thoughts about it now, how would you do it? One kid told me, I'll shoot myself with a pistol. It's waiting for me in my room. I held it to my head last night. Can you see how I'm not letting that kid out of my sight? I'm turning him over to somebody, law enforcement, mobile crisis teams. And the supervision is really critical. Without going into great detail, the Kelson case, Springfield, Oregon. Kelson wrote a suicide note. The teacher saw a gun in his backpack, sent him to the office. Kelson said, I need to go to the bathroom. Can you figure out the rest of this case? The school resource officer and assistant principal let him go to the bathroom with the gun they never asked for, nor did they search for it, and Kelson died. Went all the way to the Oregon Supreme Court. School district was not found liable. Armejo versus Wagon Mound in New Mexico. The counselor knew he was suicidal. The counselor and the assistant principal both knew there were guns in his home. They knew his parents were not home, and they drove him home from school. He walked into the house, got out one of the guns, and died by suicide. The school district was not found liable. Maybe that gives you a little clue for here's something I could say that is really very positive for all of us. Suing a school district and winning is an uphill battle, and parents usually run out of steam and they give up, or if it actually gets to court, they lose. Now, what do I really believe? Schools do things right 95%+ of the time. But occasionally we do make a mistake. And when we make those mistakes, we should all learn from them. So sharing of information has already been talked about. But this is frustrating because critical information is often hidden from us because parents don't trust us. All the stigma, they don't want anybody to know. The private practitioners, hospital personnel are not pushing to share information with schools. But the more we know, and then we can be alert for additional warning signs. The rest of these are pretty straightforward, and I think I've pretty well covered them. The importance, again, of direct language, direct questions about thoughts, plans, and actions. Moving on again. Those are the three direct questions that I've been emphasizing, and very important that our legislature says Florida school-based mental health service providers are competent to conduct a risk assessment prior to initiating a Baker Act. I was told we had something like 500,000 Baker Acts in the state last year. We need to gather a little information, meet with the kid, ask questions, do an assessment, and then we decide whether or not a Baker Act might be the necessary next step. Now, some of you undoubtedly know the work of Carolyn Stone, who's right here in Florida. And basically, she is like the expert on suicide and really all liability issues for school counselors. And it's critical that I emphasize her exact wording in that most recent ethics textbook. Notifying the parents is not a discretionary duty. It is a ministerial one. We should approach this like if we have reason to believe the kid is being abused, we don't debate about whether to call protective services. We make the call. So if you have any reason to believe the kid is suicidal, make the call to the parents. Seek out collaboration, supervision, and document the parent notification. She also stresses, and I agree with her, it is not uncommon, in fact, it's very common for a kid to deny being suicidal. At some level, yes, they want things to change. They want somebody to throw them a life preserver. They want help, but they also know if I say yes, the afternoon just changed dramatically. You know what counselors say to me all the time? Why has this happened the last 15 minutes of the school day? Do I let the kid get on the bus? No, you don't. You keep him with you. And you do it by the numbers that are all spelled out in our district policies and procedures. She's also saying, don't rely on suicide assessment for definitive answers. I'll give you one more example. Let's say that I've waited 6 months to go to the Tim McGraw concert in Palm Beach tonight, and I'm anticipating 2 hours of traffic to get there. And now I've got a suicidal kid in my office. Can you see how I might want to minimize it and think, he'll be okay. I'll check on it in the morning. But if I don't make that call this afternoon, I'm going to toss and turn all night long, and I'll never forgive myself for not making that call, staying late, and doing whatever I need to do. And her comment, use the moderate and severe to kind of intensify your discussions with parents. And by the way, you remember one dad, I'll never forget this, he said, Dr. Poland, I don't care if you can get counseling in the community for my kid for $1 a week. I am not doing it. Sir, you cannot possibly mean that. Oh, but I do. You know, we're being sued in civil court. After he stole that car, ran from the police. You know, he ran over and killed two pedestrians. Best thing for our family would be he should just kill himself. Sir, you're giving me no choice but to call protective services. And I do believe most parents will be cooperative, but not all. One mom said to me, I was just waiting for the other shoe to drop. You mean you already knew he was suicidal? Why weren't you looking for help? Or the parent of the 9-year-old boy who hung himself, who said, you know, he tried last week. I thought I had hidden all the ropes. You see how frustrating it is that mental health services are not sought. And frankly, we all need to work to have them be more available in our schools and in our communities. Or another mom, when she was notified about her daughter Julie being suicidal, turned to her and said, don't you ever think about suicide again. Mom, I think you just cut off the very communication we need to get going. I'm sure this is very difficult news for you to hear today, Mom, but we really need to focus on Julie. And what is it that's going on in her life that makes her think she does not want to live anymore? And in the CAS desk, there's a parent notification form. What if the parent won't sign it? Well, I'm going to walk out the door right now, get Doug, who's across the hall. Doug, would you come in here and just verify that Mr. and Mrs. Smith are unwilling to sign their form, that I'm notifying them of the suicidal psychological emergency of their child today? We need to document that notification to parents. All right, here's a Florida case. You know, if you could all call in or text in, I'd love to know. You ever heard of it? Polk County, I know you won't know where that is. I've been back to Polk County to train. But see, I'm willing to bet something. If you work in Polk County today, I'm willing to bet you never heard of this case, because we actually bury these cases. And this was years ago. I think it might have actually been resolved in 1997. I was on the side of the plaintiff. What's it all about? Well, let me just quickly give you the essence of a couple of depositions. Custodian said, I saw Sean Wyke trying to hang himself in the restroom during discipline lunch. I went out and told the assistant principal, this boy here just tried to hang himself. The assistant principal told me, not your problem. Don't worry about it. Finish cleaning up the cafeteria. Best friend happened to be named John. John's deposition said, my friend Sean was trying to hang himself after school in the restroom with his football jersey. I got on the school bus with Sean, and John got off the bus, ran into the house, and told his mom. His mom, her deposition, I called the assistant principal. I got him on the phone that afternoon. He said, I'll take care of it tomorrow. Can everybody listening understand the importance about why this could not wait until tomorrow? By the way, the school denied ever receiving that second call. Now, what's really wrong with the world is it's unfortunate that John's mother just didn't pick up the phone and call Mrs. Wyke. In fact, in today's world, not enough to know your kids' friends. You got to know your kids' friends' parents. You got to be demanding to be the parent that absolutely knows what goes on. But the next morning, Sean Wyke walked into school, and according to the Education Week article, the assistant principal read him scriptures from the Bible. I don't care about that. I care about everything that he did not do. Namely, he did not contact Mrs. Wyke. Nor did he call for one of the excellent school mental health professionals in Polk County. Nor did he increase supervision. Sean Wyke went home and hung himself later that day. Now, when I testified, let me be honest, that assistant principal and principal didn't like me very much. And why would I choose to do this? Because they made a mistake. We need to all learn from those mistakes. And juries can do anything they want. So they did find against the district, but it was a shared verdict. They said grandma was one-third liable, mom was one-third liable, although I have no information they ever had any idea that Sean was suicidal. They ever denied him treatment. They ever, you know, failed to provide a good home life for him. So the Polk County Schools paid out $250,000. That was their share. But the lesson, tell the parents, only one exception. You believe abuse is being suspected. All right, now let's take a look at this one. You got a classroom teacher where you work, and the kid has typed on his computer that he wants to kill himself. What should the teacher do? Well, undoubtedly you're thinking they need to take action, but what if they just say, go to the counselor now? Because I can give you examples where the kid went out the first door and left the campus. So escort the kid to the counselor. Call or ask somebody to come to the classroom to get the student. Okay, now you're the suicide prevention person for your school. That's really what I want you to be. And I want you to think about an impact beyond your school. I want you to think about being the leader for suicide prevention, intervention, and postvention for the entire district. To have administrators that would not think about making a decision in the area of suicide without your consultation. So, the kid is threatening suicide. They're sitting in your office. You call mom, you share all of your concerns, and mom says, let him walk home. I am at the house. I will be here. Let him walk home. I'll meet the school bus, etc. What do you recommend? Well, this was actually the subject matter in this case from Howard County, Maryland. The school psychologist notified mom. They made recommendations about supervision, community-based treatment. But Matthew was allowed to walk home. Mom wasn't home as she promised. Matthew reportedly talked to his dad on the phone. And I'm really sorry to tell you, later that evening, he hung himself. They sued the school. When the plaintiff's attorney called and asked me to be involved in the case, I said no. Was it ideal? No, it wasn't. But the main point, he arrived home. And I believe once he walks into the house with parents present, parents are notified of his suicidal plans, he becomes their responsibility, not the school's. I'm really sorry to tell you, the Howard County Board of Education settled out of court, and a clinical psychologist wrote something like 80% of chance had the school psychologist done something different, he would still be alive. Notifying parents, that is primarily our responsibility. And in Florida, we're really lucky to have the Baker Act as a way to evaluating as to whether or not involuntary hospitalization is needed. So I've been mentioning Columbia a couple points in time. One really big advantage is emergency room personnel. Hospitals are very familiar with the Columbia. It is standardized. There's research on it. Kelly Posner, who I know personally, has stressed, anyone can ask these questions. There are 6 questions. If you get a no to the first 2, you can go to question 6, and then you are done. But anyone can ask these questions. It has been translated into over 100 languages. There is a training video. There's also a version that combines the Columbia with the SafeT. And the Columbia is color-coded for low, moderate, and high risk. But I'm going to stand by my statement. Tell the parents. I don't care how low risk it is. Tell the parents. So moving on, there are the actual six Columbia questions. And I don't feel a need to spend my time reading them to you, but they're pretty straightforward, going really from wish to thought to plan. But that last question, have you ever done or prepared to do anything to harm yourself in the last 3 months? You want to zero in on recent behavior. Now, earlier I was stressing the importance of role play. Anytime I do a several hour presentation, I want to role play. I got a scenario. I get somebody out of the audience to role play being the suicidal teen. And by the way, I could go on for the rest of our time together about all the dangers of 13 Reasons Why. First of all, the good news, the vast majority of kids that are bullied, the victim of rape or sexting, do not kill themselves. Some do, yes. And it is a contributing associative factor. Suicide is not about revenge. The whole idea of the 13 revenge tapes, in all honesty, making those revenge tapes would have helped Hannah Baker work through a whole host of her issues. Hannah Baker had a cell phone. It was an iPhone. All she had to push the button was tell Siri. She had alternatives. And it's critical that all of those things be pointed out. And perhaps what bothered me the most about season one and season two is the adults in the program were portrayed as absent, clueless, or in the case of a few parents, downright mean. And the day Hannah died, she is at the post office. She has her 13 revenge tapes. She is about to mail them. A guy comes up to her. He says, "Hannah, we missed you at the poetry recital last Tuesday night. You are very talented. We hope to see you this week." You know, in the real world, that's all it takes. It had been a lot more realistic if Hannah had dropped the tapes in the trash can and gone on with her life. And if you saw season two, you know that it was building to a school shooting. But do you know how they handled preventing the school shooting? Clay knows it's being planned. And rather to going to an adult or to law enforcement, he calls another adolescent friend, Tony, and they stop the school shooting. Is that the message you want to give any kid in Florida? Handle this by yourself. You want them to use the Fortify Florida app and alert school administrators and law enforcement. And if you did view season one, you know, would know that Hannah Baker's suicide scene was graphic, horrific, and never should have been shown. We've known for decades, don't show graphic suicide scenes. Do not give details of the method. Don't make it front page news. Don't report it as simplistic or unexplainable. Talk about it in terms of needed mental health. Put the focus on stories where somebody got help and a suicide was prevented. Also, Google searches about suicide went up dramatically after season one. Suicide rates for adolescent males went up immediately. there will be lawsuits. They'll be very difficult to ever win against Netflix, but the program was totally irresponsible. And who knows what season three is going to bring us. But I did disagree with NASP on one key component. They said, parents, watch it with your children. Unfortunately, most parents do not have 13 hours to sit down and watch a program, nor would they be very well equipped to counter all of the dangerous and incorrect messages. Now, all I really wanted to do is call your attention to, I gave you two scenarios and you may have your own. What I really want you to do, counselor, psychology meetings, role play about suicide assessment. So I am getting a couple of messages here. And all of these slides are posted for you and the links are there. And I have not seen season three. I will force myself to watch it so that I'll be well equipped. And perhaps one of the things that bothers me the most, traveling the country, several times I've been told teachers thought the program was compelling, thought-provoking, and they taped segments of 13 Reasons Why and brought it into the classroom. That should never be done. In fact, what should we bring into the classroom? Very carefully vetted programs like SOS's Acknowledge, Care, Tell. Okay. Thank you, Dina, for letting us know season three is better and somewhat helpful. Okay. I'll try to be optimistic. Now, this just came up at a presentation I gave earlier today. The bottom line is no suicide contracts have been sorely criticized. Why? The no suicide contract is all about what not to do. The terminology that we should all be using is developing a safety plan. What are your thoughts? How could you keep yourself safe? What has helped you before when you've been in a crisis mode? Internally, what can you do? Obviously, we're hoping they know about meditation things and deep breathing and relaxation and positive imagery. Externally, who could you contact? Who's in your house when you have these thoughts? If you're home alone, what could you do? You could push the button and tell Siri. And the more we can have the student involved in developing the safety plans, because we want it to be a joint thing. If they're old enough can do it, yeah, I'd love to have them writing down their thoughts. I like to be sitting side by side with them. So we are working on this together. And sometimes there's a question like, what is your reason for living? But you ever had a kid turn that around and immediately say, none? Well, I might phrase it this way. Something has kept you alive thus far. What are those things? Because something has helped you to this point. And for our SVP newsletter, not too long ago, I interviewed David Jobes, who is a giant in the field. He's the guy at Catholic University that pretty much has all of the military grants. So, bottom line, I said to David, what do you want me to say to these students about when they have a suicidal client in front of them? Tell them, recognize the person is alive. You can stabilize them. Develop a safety plan. Continually ask them, what do you want to add to your safety plan? Also, unfortunately, sometimes the kid is seen in the private sector or the hospital and nobody did a written safety plan. If that's the case, then I believe we now need to do it. We need to keep a copy. Parents get a copy. this should be a very important point of their continuing support, follow-up, and treatment. Reentry meetings are critical before they go to the first class. How can we take off some of the academic pressure? How can we identify the trusted adults here at school? Can we share information with the private practitioners and the hospital personnel? I'm going to skip over this one other than to just tell you, same thing, same problem. Counselor who thought he knew everything about suicide assessment and chose not to call Brian's parents in White Pass, Washington. White Pass later settled out of court, although the Lewis County Superior Court said he had no duty. I want to get to two or three key things. This case is my old district. And what's this one all about? Brandy was selling drugs and Brandy got expelled. Mom came in. And of course, the AP said, I'm recommending expulsion. You may appeal that. Mom and Brandy leave. I'm really sorry to tell you. Mom dropped her off at home, went back to work. A few hours later, Brandy was dead, leaving behind a note saying, I'm sorry. Yes, I lied. I was selling the drugs. They sued us. We prevailed in court. Our argument, we had no warning signs. We had no idea we were dealing with a suicidal student. We only thought we were dealing with a student selling drugs. Now, the assistant principal was sued along with the school district. And Mr. Fowler is a really nice guy. And he said things to me that I feel obligated to pass on. Scott, I wish I'd spent a little more time with Brandy. I should have let her know we do care about you. Brandy, you just can't be at Blyle Middle School right now. Mom, this has got to be a very stressful day for your daughter. Please stay home with her the rest of the day. And Brandy, before you leave the building, I really want you to talk to the school counselor. I believe any one of those things probably would have saved your life. And I could give you other examples of kids that left the discipline conference and, yes, they went on to die by suicide. I would argue Brandy had thought about suicide before. But now a candidate for expulsion caused her to act on her suicidal thoughts. So I was involved in this case too. I was on the side of the plaintiff. They sued the Shawnee Mission School District. Why? They did nothing after the suicide of the first kid in the family who was a sophomore. No outreach to the older brother, no outreach to the younger brother. Same school, no suicide prevention information in classrooms, no outreach to classmates and friends, nobody at the funeral. As far as I know, it's the only case of its kind. And by the way, you need to know something. Nobody ever said do nothing after a youth suicide. They always said help everybody with their shock, their grief, their guilt and confusion. And you might be surprised by the term guilt. You know what four kids told me on a Monday morning once? We told her Saturday night was the night she was supposed to die. Where to put the gun, pull the trigger, it'll be quick. They're going to remember that conversation for the rest of their lives. So there is critical information that has been out there for some time about suicide postvention. I'll also call your attention to the postvention video at our website. Classroom interventions or even smaller, not an assembly. I covered that earlier. Kids are going to ask, why'd she do it? The answer is evaluate with her. We're never going to know why. I'm here to help you. You lost a friend. You lost a classmate. What method did they use? The literature really cautions and says try to avoid using the method, but very importantly, don't talk details about the method. And then I'm always asked, why didn't God stop them? Here's a response from ministers that works for me. God tried to stop her. God could not. God has embraced her, yes, and whatever afterlife you believe in. But God's actually sad. God wanted her to stay on this earth and do God's work over her natural lifetime. The kids are going to ask questions. And hopefully we guide them towards future suicide prevention efforts. We've generally underestimated the impact of a suicide. Think of it this way. When a student kills himself, it's like taking a rock and throwing it into a pond. That ripple effect is everywhere in the schools and community. I'm going to argue kids are more protected, more connected before than ever because of social networks. And we need to get positive messages out there on social networks. Essentially, all the kids now become citizen journalists as they start posting. We want them to post. It doesn't have to happen. Get help. So, moving on, in the interest of time, there's two types of clusters. Mass clusters, that's our concern when we have like celebrity suicides. Point clusters, those are more specific, short period of time in a geographical area. And I want to give you an example of a district that responded in an extraordinary way. Yes, I'd have to acknowledge 5 suicides before they called, but they got on the ball. And every administrator in Academy 20 in Colorado Springs got 3 hours of training. Every school mental health professional got 6 hours. They formed a countywide youth suicide prevention task force. They taught all school personnel, from custodians to bus drivers to secretaries to cafeteria workers, what to look for, what to do. They provided assistance over the summer. They implemented the SOS program. They implemented sources of strength. They implemented riding the wave for all the fifth graders. And in a district of 20,000, one person's sole job is suicide prevention coordinator. You know what that should mean for Broward County? They should have 13 Charlene Grosnicks, not one, with many other duties. Okay, so what do we know about postvention efforts in schools? Too short in duration, focusing on too few students. There have been what are called epidemiology studies. I think I actually said that word correctly. Those are all the points that they have found. And sadly, too often, parents just didn't think it could happen, did not see the need for mental health treatment. Safe messaging. We've talked about that a bit already. I wish somebody chat and let me know, have you ever seen this toolkit? Because I'm going to argue it would answer virtually every question you could possibly have about the aftermath of a suicide in schools. And you're never going to be criticized for following the recommendations in this toolkit. I had a hand in it, the original one 2011, the revision in 2018. My greatest hope, you'll go online and print it out. How about this first statement? Schools should strive to treat all the deaths the same. Best advice I could give you, talk to your administrators, develop a memorialization policy. This is what we will do if we lose a student, regardless of the cause of death, regardless of socioeconomic level, regardless of popularity. Emphasize help is available. Monitor the social networking sites. Prohibiting all memorials is problematic. What if the kids show up with a t-shirt, Princess Leah, the picture of the suicide victim? My advice, I want to meet with the kids. Let them wear their t-shirt today. That's how they're expressing their emotions. Let's meet with them. Let's guide them to suicide prevention and ask them to wear something else tomorrow to school. So that toolkit is incredibly important, and I highly recommend that you download it. I'd be remiss today not to cover this case because Carolyn Stone and I are both involved. We're on the side of the plaintiff. I'm sorry. I don't care whether the kid is 18 years old or not. Call his parents. I don't care if the kid denied it or not. You had all this information from his peer that he was planning to kill himself. This is currently before the Virginia Supreme Court, and the school counselor is personally being sued. Now, if I had to predict something, I suspect the counselor will be exonerated, but he is being dragged through the courts. A few final thoughts for you, and then I'm going to have a success story in a moment. Most of these I have clearly outlined, but suicide prevention, it can't be site-based. Too many Florida administrators are going to opt out. It needs to be district-wide. Don't rely on a student's denial. If I go back to the Loudon case, he simply should have called the parents. You know, I have your son right here. I got information from his peer that he was planning to kill himself, but I've asked him directly, and he says no, but you are his mom and dad. You need to know this. Take the lead in your district. You'll also find a very helpful app at SAMHSA. It is the Suicide Safe app. Put it on your phone. Okay. I want to go to my final slides. There are a couple here that have to do with, obviously, I acknowledge how intense all the crisis work is. That's why I have caregiver slides here. I hope you truly get the support you need, not only at school, but from your family as well. But I'd be remiss today not to close with something positive. Tom was a kid in Southwest Houston. Tom was living with mom and stepdad. They divorced. Tom was upset. He loved his stepdad. Stepdad moved away. Tom said, I'm going to go live with dad. I'm going to go to Jersey Village High School in Cypress Fairbanks. His mom laughed. You haven't lived with your dad since you were 3 years old. I met his dad later. He said, I didn't know much about having a kid at my house, but Tom, move in. We'll make the best of it. Well, Tom was a new kid in a large high school, and for a while he was doing okay. He had a job after school. He was passing. He had a girlfriend, Cheryl. He put a lot of emphasis on that relationship. But an old habit came back. Tom was a substance abuser. Cheryl tried to tell him, I will not have a boyfriend that's a substance abuser. Tom skipped work one day to get high. He got fired. Then Tom's grades have gone way down. Dad never even saw the report card. But on a Sunday night, Cheryl broke up with him. Tom took all the aspirin that were in the bottle. Luckily for Tom, he was awake the next morning. His dad said, I thought he had a virus. Tom, can I take you to the doctor? Tom, do you need me to stay home with you? Tom is, no, Dad. You go on to work. I'll go to school. Only over the course of the next few days, Tom's really not in his classes. He's getting high daily. He's not taking pride in appearance. He's driving recklessly. Cheryl can't quite put her finger on it, but she's worried. Thursday of that week, you could call it divine intervention, premonition, sheer luck. Cheryl feels compelled to open up Tom's locker. She has the combination. there's a suicide goodbye note addressed to her. Now, what's the critical thing here? What do most kids do with that information? Has anybody ever prepared them, taught them what to do? Because most of the time, they're going to hesitate. They're going to try to handle it on their own. But Cheryl knows better. Why? 10th grade health. They talked about it. Now she's in the counseling office. It's a busy place. She doesn't sit down and take a number. She goes, I need help. I need it now. Counselor sees the panic on her face, reads the note, and says, come with me. Now they're in Principal Truitt's office. He says, we're going to search the school. We will find him. Tom is nowhere to be found. The principal could have said, we'll check on it tomorrow. Instead, he turned to Cheryl and said, you must know where he lives. Good. Counselor and Cheryl, come with me now. We're going to his house. Turned to an assistant and says, call Dad. Tell Dad to meet us at his house. Tell Scott Poland to meet us there too. We arrived shortly after Tom did. You're wondering, what did he say to us? He said to me, I was drinking all day. I went home to get the gun. I was going to finish the whiskey, and I was going to kill myself. I don't know if he would have or not, but he certainly could have. Now, what was the outcome? Inpatient for about 10 days, outpatient for some months. If you're wondering, did he ever get back together with Cheryl? No, he didn't, but he thanked her. And I happened to go back to Cy Fair not too long ago, and I ran into Tom's counselor that day. That kid, it's been so many years. Have you ever seen him again? The answer was, yes, I saw him in the grocery store. He's married, a couple of cute kids. By the way, if he somehow was on our webinar today, would he say, my life is wonderful? Probably not. He'd just say, he is glad to be alive. And who did the most in that situation? Clearly, that would be Cheryl. But we all worked as a team. Without a doubt, I am sure many of you have already been involved in dramatic interventions. We can easily prevent the vast majority of youth suicides in our state. Get your school certified. Be a leader in your district. And I hope in some small way, I have been helpful to you today. And most of all, I commend you for your interest in this important topic. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Poland, for sharing this time with us today. It was very informative, and I would like all of you to know that this webinar will be posted on our website, Student Services website. It's www.sss.usf.edu. Thanks again, and we hope to continue some of these website webinars. If you have any topics of interest, please let us know. We would also like to invite you to the ESSE conference, where we will be having a student services special work group, where we will go into more topics of interest that support our school-based mental health providers. Thank you all, and have a good day.